Hey Ross, you all right?
I'm great, thanks Simon.
That t-shirt that you've got, Ross, where'd you get that from?
Yeah, it's actually from Beatnik Clothing. It's an independent brand owned by a good friend of mine, Liam Wade, or Wadey, who's been a guest on the podcast before. Have you seen it?
I have, that's so weird. I'm wearing the Beatnik black logo embroidered sweatshirt.
Well, look. That's great. I was going to ask where you got that from, because it looks really, really cool.
Yeah, I got it from beatnikclothing.co.uk.
Beatnikclothing.co.uk?
Yeah, beatnikclothing.co.uk.
As in B-E-A-T-N-I-C-K clothing? Beatnikclothing.co.uk?
I think so. Spelling's never been my forte, but I think so.
Oh, brilliant. Well, as you can see, I'm sporting the 80s Vaporwave print t-shirt. It's got a sort of really cool 80s, like, Miami beachfront vibe. Gives me kind of Grand Theft Auto Vice City vibes.
Yeah, almost Miami Vice.
Yeah, that's right. And it looks, it's a really good fit. The colours are popping. It looks really cool. It's really, really affordable. This particular one was only £18. And you can actually get a discount code, right?
You can. It's Simon and Ross 10. You'll get 10% off your first order. That's so great, isn't it, Ross?
That's really good. Who wouldn't want to do that? So if you go to beatnikclothing.co.uk and
beatnikclothing.co.uk?
That's beatnikclothing.co.uk.
Ah, beatnikclothing.co.uk.
And type in Simon and Ross 10 at checkout, you'll get a 10% discount.
Absolutely everything on my windows, microphone included.
Literally about a second before I was about to go out, I moved the bed and it all just collapsed, so I had to remake it all. All the things that go across.
Slats.
Yeah, they all just fell out, so then I had to get a thingy, like not a screwdriver, what's the screwdriver? Good start. Allen key, get an Allen key and screw it all back together.
Yeah.
So great.
Right. Well, I went to open the blind next to me.
Yeah.
Outside, and I went to pull it down, and the entire fucking blind just came completely out of the housing, crashed onto the windowsill, and I mean, I haven't even picked up half the stuff it wiped out. I just grabbed the microphone. But yeah. Smash bang, crash bang, wallop.
Got a hell of a cold.
Yeah, so have I. Me and Fatima were saying she was feeling ill last week.
Yeah,
and coughing. She's now like got banging headaches. She's been trying to get home from work early, which obviously hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But then like yesterday morning, I woke up, my throat was really sore, and then this, like all day today, it's been like, oh fucking hell.
Yeah.
Throat doesn't feel good at all. But like, I didn't want to cancel.
Yeah. I'll be honest, if you'd have cancelled right now, I probably wouldn't have minded.
I can tell by the tone of your reply on WhatsApp how game you are to cancel.
Not cancel, because long term not cancel, no, because it would have been about another 6 weeks until we could have done it again. But you know, it's just one of the things. Right now, I would cancel, but long term, it's not for the best.
Well, let's just let's just do an hour.
Yeah, that's fine. Shut up. Right, okay. You do the intro.
Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Simon and Ross podcast show. Joined as always by my esteemed friend and colleague, Mr. Simon Packer.
Hello from across the Pennines.
All right.
Yeah.
I have to apologise to listeners in advance. We're both struck down with whooping cough.
Allergy.
Yeah. So I nearly didn't show up because of it, and Simon's just told me that he nearly didn't show up because of it. But we both showed up.
Just like when it's not quite hard enough and it's very soft, you still plough through, don't you?
Plough through. Yeah, not something that can get in the back doors, that's for certain.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, there's no purchase, Ross.
No purchase? You need belaying, don't you?
Yeah.
you need chalking up.
Yeah, that's it. So this is the first episode of hopefully a few where we go through Elton John generally and his book. What's it actually called? Me.
Yeah, at this point, a number of listeners will probably go, "Ah, fuck that, then."
Yeah. Don't like it.
We're hoping that there's a few Elton John. I mean, both Simon and I are big Elton John fans, and we're due to go and see him next
yeah
month.
Yeah, yeah,
fantastic. Big one that I've always wanted to see that. Yeah, never thought I would have a chance to, and so we ordered the tickets whilst pissed on my wedding day for both myself, Simon, and the rest of the group.
I didn't remember.
I was very confused, and I woke up the next morning and looked at my banking and I thought, what the fuck's happened here? And then it was actually Fatima that said,
you're like, oh no, it's happened again.
She said, yeah, you bought Elton John tickets.
Elton John tickets all round,
and I don't regret a fucking second.
No.
So we thought it'd be a fitting time, because we talked about doing an Elton John podcast. So
yes,
what better time than a month before we're about to see him? So yeah, we've been reading the autobiography, and it's just going to be a general Elton John themed mini series. Let's call it. So enjoy. If you enjoy it and you're not an Elton John fan, hopefully we can convert a few, entice a few to go and listen.
Or if you really like him, we might put you off him completely.
That's a precursor of things to come.
Yeah.
We almost didn't show up.
Yeah. Just can't wait for it to be over, if I'm absolutely honest.
Yeah. Let's just smash through this, yeah.
And so, yeah, so we... I mean, I think I've known Elton John for as long as I can remember anything. He's just always been there, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, your opinion and experience and exposure to Elton John will be very different to mine.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't come into him until the last sort of 4 or 5 years, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm obviously fucking always aware of Elton John. Always a fan of his more well-known songs to non-Elton John fans, like The Circle of Life and so on, and the bits that he's done, you know, for Candle in the Wind and
Lady Diana.
Yeah, and that sort of stuff. But sort of only in the last few years have I started actively going out and seeking his stuff down myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And realize, I'll tell you what it actually was. It was you playing it in the old Sposs Edge. Yeah.
What's a Sposs Edge?
Oh, it's his Jessup's backwards. Oh, it was my way of getting away with
just say at work. That would have been far easier.
Yeah, but I like the word spossage.
Spossage, yeah.
Sounds like something that should be served on an English breakfast. So, you know, you play...
Oh, it is definitely a disease. I'm afraid you got an incredibly infectious variant of spossage.
There's nothing we can do. Your spossage is broken.
You've been trying to enter Elton John with a softie.
No, not completely. It was a spossage.
Yeah.
But it was the same sort of thing with Elton John as it was with David Bowie. I enjoyed David Bowie, but it was sort of regularly listening to and certain songs repeating that I hadn't really listened to before. And I thought, and it was like more and more often, it was like, oh, this is a banger.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a banger. This is a banger. And I was like, fucking hell, he's just got so many
good
tunes.
You really got into, this is going off on David Bowie now, but you really got into the Border of Suburbia song.
Yeah,
with that saxophone in the middle, you always used to go, "Oh, this is a banging saxophone solo." This,
like that. Banging saxophone solo. You used to point the finger and waggle it in the air, which is my way of saying banging sax solo.
Yeah,
I almost don't need to speak. If I'm waggling the index finger in the air, that means that there's a banging sax solo going on.
Yeah, or if you stomping up and down the warehouse like a soldier. Jonah Louis on.
Have a quick look at the calendar. Yep, it's after October.
So seeing
it in January is just sad.
So I had a playlist of Elton John and I just basically bombarded you with it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I do
that's my MO.
I'd never really, but the good thing about that playlist was it was sort of because Elton John's got so many albums.
Yeah.
It was like it spanned decades worth of music. Yeah. And it's almost like it's really hard to, we'll come on to this as a sort of another point, but it's always hard, I find, to pinpoint songs on albums with Elton John. It's not like, I mean, in my mind, that there's certain albums that stand out, but there's also a lot where I'm like, I couldn't name you one song off that album.
No, I know what you mean. But then when you actually listen to them, you go, oh, yeah, of course I know that one.
Yeah. But they're hard to pinpoint.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's also part of my problem. If I was to do my own, like, top 10 now, most of them would be regarded as later Elton John.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially like he's such a, I think, a good place to start as well, because we haven't started yet.
No.
So I watched Rocket Man sort of fairly, well, it was released fairly recently, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I watched it. It'd probably been out for about 6 months before I watched it. And I thought, you know, it sort of came out at the time when there was quite a few sort of biopics coming out, like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Rocket Man, and then you had
Think of a third, Ross. Come on,
Elvis.
Oh yeah.
Although I've never really sort of professed to be an Elvis fan, but you know there was a lot of biopics floating around, and Rocket Man was the most surreal.
Definitely,
it felt like the most sort of Bohemian Rhapsody was like straight biopic.
Yes.
Whereas Rocket Man, it felt like it focused on just this much.
Yes. Ross is holding his fingers about an inch apart.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't represent banging sax solo. That represents limp spossage.
Yeah. Or frightened spossage.
I went to see them in Manchester the other week with spossage, I tell you.
Have they reformed? That's good.
Yeah. It's reformed, Ham. Reconstituted lips and assholes. Anyway,
there's the title.
Just drop them, ill or not, they get dropped. It's just the way I speak. I don't even try. I sound like this. It's very annoying to most people.
Trying to be professional is a nightmare, isn't it?
Works well for me.
Yeah.
But I found that you know, upon reading, I'm about 50% of the way through the book, so you know, we'll talk about more in later episodes after we've both had a chance to finish it.
Well, I was going to say as well that I watched Rocketman when it came out, and I really didn't enjoy it at all. I thought it was awful. I thought I likened it to my dad as Bohemian Rhapsody meets Mamma Mia. It was very much like they'd say something, they'd talk, and then they'd say, "Oh, yeah, well, that guy really is a rocket man," and then start singing. You're like, "Oh no, it's like these jukebox films."
Yeah, what I wanted was Bohemian Rhapsody for Elton John.
Yes, yeah.
I did enjoy Rocket Man, but I know that if I was trying to convert someone or bring somebody into the Elton John fold, I wouldn't be like, "Oh, you need to sit and watch this." If somebody had never heard of Queen, I'd be pretty comfortable saying, "Well, we'll stick Bohemian Rhapsody on."
Yeah, it's safe.
Yeah, but with Rocket Man, it's like, nah, it's not a good. It's not an intro to Elton John movie.
No.
But reading the book, there was a lot of. I feel like I'm learning about the guy almost from scratch, really.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the film gave any. The film sort of like he went from living with his mum and dad to being this huge superstar.
Yes. Yeah.
But in reality, you know, he spent years as a session player.
That was about 12 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will add, because I've not been feeling well, I've had about 4 hours sleep over the last 2 days. Oof. So last night I watched Rocket Man. Well, this morning at 2 o'clock, I watched Rocket Man.
Right. Okay.
And I will say I did enjoy it a lot more.
Right. I did enjoy it just because of the subject matter.
Yes.
But like we've said,
I think it ties. It's better to watch Rocket Man after you've read the book.
Mm.
Because you kind of get the cues as such.
Yeah, well, just learn a bit about Elton John first.
Yeah.
Before you watch it, don't use that as your source of truth. But I will say I sort of I often forget how funny. Simon nearly just lost an eyeball.
But
he sneezed and 6 slats fell out of the bed behind him.
That's how it happened last time.
The domino effect.
Yeah. maybe that's why you're... Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe that's what knocked your window ledge off.
Oh. Yeah, well and truly sposs-edged. I often forget how funny Elton John is.
Yes,
he's a really funny guy. Yeah. And I've seen him like on like Jonathan Ross and stuff, and I've always thought like he's really funny and really charming, and I generally like how he holds himself and I just like the guy. But then reading this book has sort of reaffirmed that, and some of the things he comes out with.
It is a gold mine. I mean, I know you don't like me doing it, but I have highlighted certain things that I first of all wouldn't expect anyone to write in their biography. Also, let alone him. Maybe he's the only person I would ever expect it from, but some of it still surprises you.
Yeah.
I'm not quite as far as you, obviously. But yeah, there are certain things that, yeah.
Well, the first thing that
I wouldn't put that detail in my biography.
I probably would.
Yeah.
I wouldn't leave anything. I wouldn't admit anything. But no. The first thing that had me in bits was when he was talking. Maybe you can remind me why. But he talked about how his mum used to put carbonic soap up his ass.
What? I don't remember that bit. Really?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember. No, right, okay. No, failed at the first bit. No, don't remember that at all.
But I made a few my Elton talking point list. I made like after when I finished the first 10%. So now it's not as prominent in my mind. But yeah, I've clearly got a thing here that says bar of soap up the ass.
No, you are right. I had highlighted that bit.
Oh, have you really?
Yeah.
Go on then, read it out.
So, Nan had gone berserk. When she saw my mother's remedy for constipation, she laid me on the draining board in the kitchen and stuck carbolic soap up my arse. If she liked to scare people, she must have been overjoyed by me because I was fucking terrified of her. It starts off with, but some of my mum's behaviour would be considered disturbing, even by the standards of the day.
Yeah.
So that is weird that that stuck in your head, and I don't remember highlighting it.
Yeah. Well, that was the first big laugh I had.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And there's plenty more to be had, but. Yeah, that was a particularly good one. But I just really enjoyed learning about him playing in Bluesology.
Yeah, yeah.
And just how skint he was.
Yeah.
Playing in the, and sort of going at it alone, and stepping away from just being like a backing pianist playing songs that he really didn't care about, playing the same old shit.
But you sort of also got the impression that that's where many people will stay.
Yeah.
You know, there's maybe a lot of even the people maybe in the band, I don't know what they went on to, but I think some of them did something, didn't they? But I think it'd be quite easy to fall into that trap because it's steady-ish money.
Well, it was an age when people weren't writing their own stuff as much.
No.
They would buy songs.
Yes.
So, and he sort of paints that picture where, you know, and even in the early years of him and Bernie getting together,
it was all about people buying their songs, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was on about like, oh, we'll sell this to Cilla Black.
Yeah. <You know?
laughs> And it was sort of, you write your songs and you hope that somebody big is going to buy them off you.
Yeah.
But the idea of actually putting out your own stuff and performing your own stuff
wasn't necessarily there. Yeah.
And they didn't think that the stuff they had was even worthy of it.
No. And I think a lot of it as well was sheet music was still a big thing at that point as well. So a lot of, I don't think it's mentioned in the book, but I know the Beatles especially, you know, the sheet music, I think only stopped being counted in the charts in the 70s or maybe even the 80s because people that maybe couldn't afford record players and buying records would buy the sheet music and play it themselves.
Yeah.
So I think that was a big part of it as well.
Mm.
And it's interesting hearing about, I think the guy, I can't remember his name now, but the guy that made bands that were like the bands that you've heard of and sing their songs. And they advertised, you know, I think it was, you know, it was like instead of the four tops, you get the five tops.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The Tomtations.
Yeah, he would basically look at somebody who was really successful in America and then create an English version of them.
Yeah. And then eventually get the original artist over to perform in these clubs as well.
In some instances, I can't remember the exact, you might have some examples highlighted, but there's, you know, the cover versions would actually do better than the originals.
Yeah.
Relaunch the sort of.
It was quite a few. There was about two or three that you gave the examples of, which I can't find either.
but
it happened a lot.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, he just seemed to be really good at like remastering existing songs that he thought should have been big hits that weren't, and then sort of respecking them a bit and making them hits.
Yeah,
and then the original artist would then come over. You know, so it's quite. You've obviously got to have a very good ear.
Yeah,
knowing what something's been released and it hasn't landed, and it's like, well, it should have landed because it's an amazing song. What do we need to do to make it land?
Get a young white guy to sing it instead.
Yeah.
At that point, especially. At that point, especially.
Mm.
Yeah.
But this idea of, him and Bernie slowly stuff, because I've always been sort of quite fascinated by the certain songwriters and certain musicians where you just think it's just meant to be. And I don't mean that to discredit the effort that's been put in, but there's certain, like, I read Bob Dylan's Chronicles.
Yeah.
Is it Chronicles? I think it's called Chronicles. And he talks about how, you know, I mean, he's responsible for some of the greatest songs that have ever been written. And he's regarded as one of the greatest musicians of all time. And songs would just hit him like a bolt of thunder, a bolt of lightning, bang. Right. And he always carried a notepad with him. And songs would almost like just hit him fully formed, right? Mm. It's like, well, how the fuck? What is it about you? You know, it was just meant to be. And the way that Bernie writes lyrics and then Elton just somehow, you know, like it's almost like Elton John
sort of plucks the tune from the air.
Yeah, like the songs wouldn't have existed without Bernie's lyrics existing first. And it's just like, how the fuck does that work? Like, what is it about that process that works so well? Like, that didn't, you know, work previously.
Yeah.
Like, that's like a perfect synergy of two people. Yet, you know, and obviously it's not, you know, Elton John's put albums out without Bernie. Not as good, yeah.
Not as good.
And it's just, I always just thought that process and that synergy between the two of them is a bit bonkers, really. Mm. Like he wrote Rocket Man in one morning. That's one thing that stood out to me in one of the, you know, that sort of everyone was in bed. He'd got up, Elton been up earlier and he was just sat down at his piano and he woke up and came down to Rocket Man.
going back to the Beatles again, but Paul McCartney said that, you know, yesterday he woke up with it fully formed in his head.
Mm.
You know, but I suppose it's their job. So they're probably always thinking about songs. You know, you're probably thinking about your work the majority of the day, even when you're not doing it. And an idea will come to you, you know, or I'll think of something. I think, right, I'll do that tomorrow. That'll help. So because it's their job, I'm guessing they think in songs.
it's more likely to occur to a songwriter.
Yes.
Because they are songwriters.
Yeah.
But it's the differentiator between being a good songwriter and being a fucking multi... Oh, that call's just arrived. Hang on.
All right. So just going back to that, I found it in here. This is talking about Roy Tempest. If he couldn't get the Temptations or the Drifters to cross the Atlantic, he would find a handful of unknown black singers in London, put them in suits and book them on a nightclub tour billed as the Tempting Temptations or the Fabulous Drifters. When anyone complained in feigned ignorance, of course they're not the Temptations. They're the Tempting Temptations. Completely different band. So Roy Tempest effectively invented the tribute act.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah.
Going back to what we were saying about the other bands. They'd had big hits, American hits, but in Britain, white pop stars had seized their own songs, covering them and invariably being more successful. Wayne Fontana and the Mindbenders seemed to be the chief offenders. They'd re-record Major Lance's and Patti LaBelle's A Groovy Kind of Love and vastly outsold the originals. Billy Stewart Sitting in the Park had flopped while Georgie Fames had the hit. You can tell this rankled them, and understandably so. In fact, I got a good idea of just how much it rankled them with a mod in the audience at the Ricky Tick Club in Windsor. made the mistake of shouting out, "We want Georgie Fame," in a sarcastic voice as Billy Stewart sang "Sitting in the Park." I've never seen a man that size move so fast. He jumped off stage in the crowd and went after him. The kid literally ran out of the club in fear of his life, as indeed you might if a trigger-happy 24-stone soul singer had taken a sudden dislike to you.
I think what was interesting is sort of being around at that time, and he was sort of, I mean, he sort of says he's bisexual, but is nothing. There's not much that lends itself, you know, there's nothing about his lifestyle that really lends itself to bisexuality.
No.
But he talks about, I mean, obviously he did get married to a woman quite late on in a particularly chaotic point in his life.
Yeah.
But when he was sort of young and in his mid-20s and he was just breaking through and he was forming all these connections and he started working with John Reed.
John Reed, yeah.
Yeah.
Nasty man, by the way.
Eh?
He's just awful, isn't he? He seems awful, especially in the films.
Yeah, he does. He talks about, and I don't know if you've sort of got onto this bit yet, but obviously it took him a while to actually come out, and by the time he did, he thought it was going to be this big revelation, and everyone was like, "Well, yeah,
we know.
Obviously, you've been hanging out in gay clubs with loads of gay men for years." But he was like completely sort of asexual, almost like didn't really seem to get involved, like didn't know what to do. It wasn't until he was sort of well into his 20s that he sort of lost his virginity. But he talks about AIDS, and obviously AIDS was a really big thing, and he lost a lot of friends and a lot of people to it, and he sort of puts it down to, you know, he says AIDS would have most likely have killed him had it not been for his preference towards voyeurism.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, I didn't actually have that much sex. What I would do is seduce blokes to do things to one another when I would watch. So he was like, my appetite for voyeurism is essentially what, you know,
saved him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only Freddie Mercury had the same options.
I know. But I think I don't want to sort of go too far into the book, like too far beyond where you might be.
No.
But I also don't want to jump too far ahead in the Elton John story. I'm just conscious that the things that are freshest in my mind are the bits that I've read over the last 3 or 4 nights.
Well, it sort of skipped over in the film, but in the book, it does seem to sort of think about changing his name for a bit longer than it implies in the film. And I think he was encouraged to do it.
It was two members of Bluesology, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Is it like so John Summer and Summer Elton?
Yeah, he was Reg Dwight. And then you had Elton Dean. And then John was Long John Baldry. And he just mixed the two. In the film, he looks at a picture of John Lennon and goes, "John."
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe that's a factor, but it's not. Not what he says in the book.
There was a funny thing with John Lennon where he was trying to, he always tried to think outside, because he's a serial collector, isn't he? And he's a hoarder.
Yes.
Elton John. And
it's the sort of person that would be on a council estate that would be, without the money, he'd be on one of them hoarding programs, wouldn't he?
Yeah, definitely. He'd definitely be sat on a sofa in his front garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
12 Ford Escorts in bits on his driveway. All identical.
He talks about struggling to think of things to buy Elton John. John Lennon.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest things that he bought him that he knew he wouldn't have is a cuckoo clock, but instead of a cuckoo, it was a wooden cock that used to come out of the doors, just this wooden dick. And he always said that John Lennon had like a really good sense of humour, and that...
To be fair, I quite like one of them.
I don't know, you would. And you'd bend over in front of it as well, wouldn't you, at midnight?
he does say in the book about he did almost seem not interested for quite a while. I don't know how much that's true, but it's I can get it. I can get it if you're that let's say, damaged from your past and not sure. And obviously it was the sort of 50s, 60s. Probably best.
I don't know how damaged from his past he is, really. I didn't really get the impression. I mean, it's not sort of, he didn't have like an ideal upbringing. It sounded like there was a lot of conflict at home, and his mom and dad
hated each other.
Yeah.
They sort of married by accident or necessity.
It's not, I mean, fucking hell, that's a tale as old as time. That,
yeah.
Most of us can relate to that sort of crack. It's just, I wouldn't say it was a damaged upbringing.
I think it was.
I mean, maybe. I didn't get that. I got the impression that it wasn't ideal and it was a bit shit. But I certainly wouldn't say it was like damaged.
I think it was just loveless, let's say, then, rather.
Yeah. Well, his mum sort of, he's, because I was talking to my grandma about, I was in Barrow for a day last weekend, and I was having lunch with my grandma, and I'd mentioned that I was reading this because she's a big Elton John fan.
Yeah.
And I mentioned I was reading his autobiography, and she was talking about his mum. And she was sort of saying, oh, she's a fucking nutter, you know, Elton John's mum. And I was like, was she? I was like, I know she's a bit odd, but she was like, oh, God. He was like, Elton John's mum was renowned for being a bloody psycho, and he was always really close with her, and she was going too close with her, if you ask me. And she was going, you know, he could never seem to get away from his mum. And I didn't sort of get that impression until later in the book when he was living in that big Woodside. He was living, I don't know if you're at that point yet.
Nope.
But he buys this big house called Woodside, and his mum comes to live with him, and it lasted for a matter of months because she just turned into a fucking tyrant, and she was like talking to all of the house staff like shit, and she would always like have a go at him for what he was spending his money on, and he had more money than he knew what to do with.
Yeah.
But she was always like asking him to justify, why have you bought this piece of art, or why have you bought it? And in the end, he was like, I'll tell you what, just fuck off. And her and Fred, or Durf, as he calls him, you know, ended up moving out. I think it was on Christmas Eve. he just fucked him off because she was doing his head in. But she always seems to sort of come back into the...
Yeah.
Into the fold. And I think it was his nana as well that he had living in. He'd built like an annex for her. And they wanted to keep an eye on her because his granddad had died.
Yeah.
So they wanted Nana close, but she was a very independent woman. So he didn't, you know, she wouldn't be interested in like living in the main house. So they created this little separate area. So she had her own little garden, and she could pretty much lead her own life. But he used to sort of invite people and not tell her. And he invited the Queen's mum. And, you know, he's obviously always had been quite close with the royals, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And he invited the Queen's mum for lunch, and he didn't tell his nana. And he said, oh, nana, he said, someone's here to see you. And she'd sort of come hobbling over, sort of swearing, what the fuck do you want? And she had like a garden that had sort of her marigolds on, and she'd been out in the garden weeding, and she just stood up, and the Queen's mum was there. And she said she never truly forgave him for doing that to her.
But no, I think... Another bit in the book I've highlighted is I've never knowingly chatted anyone up in my life. I've never been to a gay club. I had no idea how to pick someone up. What was I supposed to say? Do you want to come to the cinema with me and maybe get your knob out later? I mean, he's right.
We've all asked ourselves, how the bloody hell do I chat this person up?
Fancy coming to McDonald's? I can get your knob out later.
Yeah. I think he seems to have like those internal conversations and struggles, the sort of thing that you have when you're 16. He had when he was like 24.
Yes.
You know, because I remember the first time I was sort of completely
pubic,
taken off, and this isn't anywhere near the sort of realms of foreplay, but I remember going for a walk. I was in school, and some girl had said, "Oh, you know, she one of her mates had passed me a note saying that she fancied me and all this, and then she was like, she wants to know if you'll go for a, we used to call it going for a bod,
right."
Going for a bod was basically going for a walk. Are you coming for a fancy going for a bod? And you're a kid. You'd walk around the streets.
Yeah.
And she'd said, oh, so and so wants to. I won't name names. But, oh, so and so wants to know if you're going for, you know, because we're a highly successful podcast. Swords.
Don't want this to end up in court, Ross.
You don't know who's listening, do you? If she's listening, she'll know exactly. As our son wants to know if you want to go for a bod tonight with her. And I was like, oh, well, yeah. I was quite surprised because she's quite a clean-cut girl and I was anything but a clean-cut guy. Like, I had, like, long, fucking scraggly, messy hair and I was a metalhead. I was like, right, it just must just be my shining personality and my ability to drop a podcast title at the whatever I want.
It was evident even then.
Which was largely unrecognized at the time. I remember we went for this bod and I was sort of like, I'd never even, kissed a girl properly.
Yeah.
When I was really young, I'd done shit, stupid shit, like that I was too young to understand. But I'd never actually, I think I was like 14.
Right,
going out for a walk with a girl, your hormones are absolutely firing.
You
get a lob on for absolutely no reason. That's just the strain at your genes 24/7.
Waiting for like any excuse.
Just
power cut. You'd have already had a wank in the middle of it
all the time. And we sat on this bench and she sort of like made a move and I had no intention of making a move. Like,
right.
I didn't have a fucking clue. Like, I'm glad that she was more forward than me because I didn't have a fucking clue. And she made a move and started kissing me. And I was like, no way, as if this is fucking happening. And I remember like she started using a tongue and to me, like she might as well have been.
She's French. European.
I might as well have been hanging out the back of her on this bench in broad daylight. Like, am I my wife? We can't be doing this in public, you know? I was completely blown away by it. I walked away and my dick was killing me.
Hurting so much, it itched.
As long as it's thick and it looks like it itches.
There's that part too.
But that was when I was like 14.
So
Elton John sounds like he was like that when he was like in his 20s. Where he was just like, what the fuck do I do? Like, what's the...
Well, I think he does say in the book that he effectively lost sort of 10-15 years by just not being interested. So like you're right, a lot of the experiences he had sort of mid-20s were what we had when we were 14, 15.
Yeah, only the people that are going to be interested when you're in your mid-20s are going to be looking for something a bit more than a
hopefully.
So, you're kind of thrust in at the deep end, really.
Literally.
Yeah. But, I suppose it's sort of... He'd have had a lot of people who were after him.
Mm.
Being completely oblivious to flirtations and advances and I don't really understand why, because he sounded like quite a charming, outgoing, I suppose. I think his work ethic, you find early on in the book just how often, how many gigs he was playing, how many different projects he was in and how many between session playing and then between in Bluesology and then just constantly he talks about doing like 3 gigs a day.
Yeah.
And you get fuck all, you get peanuts for it.
Yeah. And they stop off somewhere down the motorway and do another one on the way back or something.
Yeah. Just the sheer volume. It's like, is that what that must have been what was required to eventually, but like I say, there'll be loads of people who never did break through. Mm. It's just, he just happened to be a bit of a musical prodigy, because I don't think he even came from a musical family.
Not particularly. They had a piano. I think his grandma could play a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't think his mum or dad did. I think his dad did, maybe, from what I can gather. But no, I don't think so.
I don't think because his dad never really expressed any interest, did he?
No. No, and he was into...
even well after he'd made it, and he was when he was on the board of bloody Watford Football Club, and he took his dad to a Watford game, and it was sort of he still felt that he had something to prove to him, and he was wildly successful by this point, and even still his dad was just like dad was never really asked, like I don't think he ever really saw it as a
No, I mean, from what I remember, there's a little bit where he says he shows it in its own way. He's very proud of you in his own way. Which...
Yeah, that's just another way of saying, I don't know why, but...
Yeah, he's just like that. He's just odd.
Yeah. You know?
But yeah, it seemed very reserved, which is odd.
Well, was he an army man?
I think he was, yeah.
Yeah,
which is why he could be gone for months on time and then just arrive one night and expect everything to be normal. An odd setup. But I guess a lot of people were a bit like that at the time as well.
Yeah, well, I think it
wasn't uncommon.
That's what I mean. That's why I think, like, I don't think that Elton John's, I haven't, there was nothing that really gave me the impression that his upbringing was particularly different for the time.
Mm. I suppose. Yeah,
it had its quirks, but there wasn't anything that struck, other than having a bar of soap stuck up your ass. There wasn't. But I mean, I had a mate on my street, and we used to be terrified of his dad because we'd seen him stuff a bar of soap down his son's throat when he heard him swearing. And his dad was this big bloke, and we were in his room, and
my mum did that to me.
Did she? Yeah. So it's quite it's not unheard of that. and obviously it was a completely different, you know, for me it had probably been 2001 or something like that.
Yeah.
And his dad fucking booted his bedroom door in and I heard you, you're that foul language, and he grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and dragged him downstairs, and we were all terrified, like we thought he was gonna get the shit kicked out of him, you know. And he just fucking got this bar of soap and put it in his son's mouth. And he was like, fucking bite down on that.
Really?
He was like, this is what's going to happen every time I use language like that.
And I remember for a few, well, at least a week after, there was, obviously, she put it in my mouth and I tried to stop it and obviously clenched my teeth. So there was teeth marks in the soap. And I remember, obviously, for the first few days after, I was cleaning myself with, it just reminded me every single time I looked at it, and it had my teeth in it. Like, oh, yeah. Thankfully, I don't swear anymore, so it's all good.
I used to be a proper little knobhead when it came to swearing. Like, I used to tell my mum and dad when I got home, they had like an anti-swearing policy. And I used to get home from primary school, and they'd be like, did you use any swear words today? And I'd be like, yeah, I said bugger. But it's because I stubbed my toe. They're like, right, we'll let you up, but don't say it again. And the following day, did he say anything? Fast forward 5 years, did he swear today? Yeah, I said, cunt lips.
Well, that was because my dick was so hard it was itching.
That's because I couldn't wrap my head around long division. Yeah, I remember. Like, I remember thinking I was terrified of lying. I thought if I lied, or if I tried to hide anything, I mean, it's quality indoctrination from my parents, absolute quality work. But I used to think that if I lied, like that, I couldn't put a label on it back then. I was too young. But looking back now, it was essentially karma. I had a really super hyper superstitious belief in if I lied. I would have to pay for it in some way, regardless. Yeah. You know, so it, for me, redemption came from just going home and saying, you know, I said fanny hair today, rather than have to hide it and think it's gonna, you know, I'd rather just my mum and dad say, don't say that word.
Can you use it in a sentence, Ross?
Yeah,
I really wanted to. No, anyway. So yeah. No, I think it was probably the same for me, to an extent. But I think it was always I just scared of being found out.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was probably a bit too honest at points.
Yeah, so there's no way I could ever have been found out.
No.
But I just hated the idea of lying.
Yeah.
To the point of complete wimpiness.
I've never said fanny hair, Mum.
Yeah. I thought you had a list of things I didn't say today.
Eventually, by the end of it, she just had like an A4 sheet, which she just checked off. Just...
Yeah.
Nipple tassels? No. Okay. Fanny hair? Maybe. Okay. Should we put a question mark there?
Well, I don't know about you, but I used to get grounded like so easily.
I was never particularly grounded, but yeah, I'd be in trouble.
Oh, fucking hell. I used to go and do a paper round in the morning. Yeah. And it used to be my mission. It was like, I'm going to get home from this paper round, and during breakfast, you know, between finishing my paper round and going to school... Going,
funny hair.
It's like, it's like, it would be... There's a point in my life when it would be a miracle if I got to school without being grounded that morning.
Really?
Oh, they would ground me for fucking nothing. That's it, you're grounded. Oh, and the more you complain, the more pissed off you get, the longer the grounding goes on.
Yeah.
But then I realised the hack is just do the reds in, they'll let you out. Because you're more just, annoying in.
Just be there. And, yeah. Right.
Just piss them off. Sit in the living room when they're trying to watch telly and just don't stop talking. And eventually they'll say, oh, fucking go outside and play football, will you?
Am I ungrounded now? Get out.
Yeah, that's it.
Yay,
so,
yippee!
I used to sit in my bedroom window or living room window and just like watch all my mates playing footy in the street. And I was absolutely hated being grounded. And it's sort of, they knew that, which is why it was such an effective punishment. But
right. But
I also knew that, you know, eventually they would just be like, I mean, it didn't always work. There'd be times when they'd say, Ross, I know exactly what you're fucking trying to do here. You're trying to piss us off to the point where we're going to let you out and it's not going to happen. Fuck off to your room. And I'd go, no, I'm all right here, thanks. And then me
and dad. Enjoying having a chat with your mum.
Me dad used to use threats that were intentionally extreme.
Right.
Like he used to take me into the kitchen and he'd say, see that oven? I'm gonna put it up to 200 degrees. I'm going to put your fucking head in it. And he would get a pencil and he'd say, I'm going to drive this pencil through your eye.
Okay.
And he would be like deliberately extreme with his threats.
I'm going to break you into 1,000 pieces.
And he never did any of those things.
No, it was enough to
shit you up.
Yeah. Was there always the possibility that you might do it?
Well, you didn't want to push it.
No.
You didn't want to test the... No part of you wanted to test the theory.
Is that why you always carry three pencils in his top pocket, just in case?
Just in case one needs to get put through your head.
David, yeah. Three pencil skirm.
You used to go, shut up, will you? I'm going to put you in the oven and switch it on. I'm going to push this pen through your eyeball.
I wonder what the limit would have been though. What did you manage to not do that would cause it to not put a pencil in your eye?
Oh, I've been terrified of my dad before.
Right, okay.
Where I've thought I'm about to get the shit kicked out of me.
Right.
Where I've been like curled up on the floor with him stood over me shouting at me.
Just leaning over, sharpening his pencil.
Yeah.
As in writing implement. Yeah.
But I've definitely been in that position as a kid where I've been terrified.
Right, okay.
Like, I was shit scared of my dad as a kid, yeah.
Do you reckon you could take him now?
It was even more scary when my mum would say, right, Dave, I think you've taken this far enough.
Yeah, the good thing about that is, though, he's now in trouble.
Yeah.
As well, not just you, but him as well.
I can liken it to being on an aeroplane, extreme, and a little bit of turbulence, and the stewardess looks frightened.
Yeah.
That's when you get scared. When my mum got scared, I would shit myself.
Right, okay.
Because I'd be like, oh, God. There's not even any feigned control of the situation. I'm going to get battered.
Or when you go to the doctor and they stick the finger up your ass. And they have to look in a book.
Yeah. Like that. They've got one finger.
Yeah.
And then they're flicking pages.
Yeah.
No. I'm pretty sure at one point the doctor sort of, upon an anal examination, employed the infinite lives cheat on Crash Bandicoot. It was like up, down, left, right, forward, forward, back, back. Spin. They're like, oh, sorry, no, I thought that was how to find your colon, but that's just how to skip level to get to level 5 and Sonic the Hedgehog.
I'm afraid you are going to die, but you have got infinite lives, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. On Sonic on the Mega Drive, not...
That's it, that's it. Or you can skip straight to the last boss. I was going to say I'm more or less at the pictures now, so I'm it's just met Quincy Jones.
All right.
And he's just about to go on at the Troubadour.
Right.
Obviously miles away from where you are right now.
Yeah, I don't have pictures. I wish I had pictures.
And him and John Reed, nasty man. Mm-hmm. Nasty.
Yeah. You can't say the name John Reed without following it with nasty man.
Nasty man. Nasty, nasty man. Yeah, that will be happening for the rest of these. Mm-hmm. I also seem to remember, I read, do you know Danny Baker, the TV presenter and radio presenter? He used to work part-time in a record shop as well. And Elton John used to just be behind the counter.
Right.
Well, when he was slightly famous as well.
Right.
They just go in so much and they knew him so much that they just let him behind the counter.
Yeah. Well, similar situation to Sposs Edge, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's where I am. So I will catch up before the next one.
I'm sure there's plenty of customers that have looked and thought, whose dick have you got to suck to get that kind of treatment in here?
Well, the answer's mine. Full stop.
Oh, dear. Mine, end of.
Yeah, mine, done. You know what we should do for the next one or two? I reckon it probably is going to still be three, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We should probably do our either top five or top 10 Elton John songs.
Let's do top five.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of where we started with everything. So, it's what we do, isn't it?
It's what we do. We like lists. We love a list. We love something that can. We love a countdown.
and I suppose it introduces. Because it definitely won't be the same.
No, probably not. No,
guarantee you.
No, yours might be a bit more obscure than mine.
No, I don't think so. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about the time.
Okay.
But yeah, I think yours will be a bit older. Mine will be a lot newer, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is,
you can't have Hakuna Matata because he doesn't sing it.
No. We'll come on to this. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was how fucking good he is at being remaining relevant.
Yes.
But I think that's like, you know, we talk about his newest album, but let's not talk about that right now because that's.
Well,
I will have some chronological.
Yeah.
Logic.
I think he is definitely more over it than the Beatles are. That's all I'll say.
More over it?
More over being relevant. I think the Beatles are very locked down and very locked. I think it's almost quite hard to get into the Beatles right now if you were to, you know, suddenly want to get into someone.
Well, you can't. Get into the Beatles right now.
You know what I mean? Whereas I think Elton John is a bit more over everything. He's still around.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's
it's like the Romeo and Juliet film that came out. I never saw it, but that's all Elton John songs, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
he was very up for doing it.
Yeah, well, he's working with the leading pop stars of the time, and he's not being shoehorned into it or forced into it or being paid just to do it to try and see. He's doing it because of how he feels about them as musicians and how they can complement and how they can collaborate and write together. Fucking so few people are doing that.
Yeah.
Definitely. At his age.
And it's still good.
Yeah.
It could be quite easy to do that and it'd be awful.
Oh, yeah, it's a stunning album. Cover to cover, it's a great album.
Yeah, definitely.
What was I about to say then?
Relevant.
Hey?
Relevant.
Well, yeah, we've said that.
Okay.
He talks in a certain point in his book about dawn of sort of electronic music.
Yeah.
And how much he loved it. And he likes being at the bleeding edge of stuff. And he loved punk when that came about. Right. And he loved, you know, and rock and roll was obviously a big thing for him. And he likes like the emerging trends in music. He sort of loves all of it.
Mm.
And he has some kind of, finds some connection with all of it that allows him to, you know, he will know off the top of his head. Like, you know, he's good mates. Like, you hear like Ed Sheeran talks about Elton John. Lewis Capaldi talks about Elton John.
Yeah.
And he's like very there for upcoming musicians and to not just as a sort of a mentor, but just as a friend and somebody who's done it and not in a weird way.
Yeah.
You know, and then he goes and records with these like Dua Lipa and people like that. And it's like, it would be so easy to be. I mean, how old is he? Is he 76?
That's a good question. He is 76,
76. Could that, eh?
Good guess.
It's just a shame you didn't do that in the quiz. How old is Elton John? But, you know, the only reason I know that is because I think the book was released last year, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, 2 years ago, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I think he said he was 75 or something at some point in the book. Yeah. But yeah, 76-year-old who's still so plugged in and knows, you know, how to still write a great pop song.
So thanks for joining us on our first trip through Elton John's life and his book, Me.
Me.
Elton John. Me. Me. Elton John. So yeah, we'll pick up in the second third. Is that the right way of saying it? The second third? Is that right? Is it?
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't have used those words. It's not incorrect, but it does sound shit.
It sounds awful. Join us for the second third.
Well, you don't need to say a third, do you? Just say the second part.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I'll do that then.
I thought you could say it'd be really facetious and be like, the next episode will be two-thirds of the way through the miniseries. Doesn't make any sense. Join us next time for part two.
The next episode will take us from 33% to 66%.
Yeah, that's 33.33 recurring, I believe.
Yeah, pie. Yeah. So, yeah.
But unlike pie, the miniseries will end.
So if you have anything to add, message us somehow and let us know about how you feel about Elton John.
I'd love to get some messages about like Elton John facts, stories, like song, like, you know, like parts of his career that you really liked or albums or songs that you particularly like. I'd love a bit of audience contribution to the subject of Elton John, because
even if you send us a message on our Facebook group or on the Patreon page, or on the Acast page, just send us a message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's touched a lot of us, hasn't he?
I'm not.
Nothing. You're not taking that.
I'm not biting. Not biting.
You look like you wanted to. You look like you were two thirds on your way to commenting there.
I was part two of thirds. Yes. Whatever I just said.
Two thirds.
Two-thirds, yeah. But no, I decided not to. Decided to rise above it.
Yeah, you did, yeah. Yeah. As soon as we go off recording, he's going to blurt it all out.
Like, I love it, don't touch me. I love him too. So yeah, join us for the second third. Join us for the second part next time. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye. third. Second part of three. That would have been easy, wouldn't it?
I mean, you don't even need to say how many it's going to be.
No.
You know, like when we were doing all the other series, you never said, this is episode 2 of 4. We never knew how long it was going to be. Tarantino 1.
Yeah, this is episode 3 of 75.
Yeah. Well, that's what it would be like if we did this series how you wanted to do it, chapter by chapter.
Oh, you see, I still think that was a good idea because it would have been fresher in my head.
It's a terrible idea, Simon. No, we didn't even do Lord of the Rings chapter by chapter.
Well, that's impossible. But this would have been easier. I think it's a bit easier to read than Lord of the Rings for a start.
They're too short. The chapters are too short.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It would have worked better.
No, you just want to do it because that's how you like to read.
I mean, I like to read a chapter and enjoy 2 years of my life and then read the second one.
Then go.
Yeah.
I just get into the habit of reading a chapter every night.
Yeah, I can't do it. I've got the time.